talk about this thing that's in my brain. It keeps me from wanting to go on, but I want some gain.
You look fantastic. So I'll go in 3, 2, 1. Everybody, welcome back to the We the Patriots podcast. I am your host, Sal Asante, and with me today, I have another person to talk finances, and today I'm talking with Mr. Skylar Fleming, and you are out of the United States, and I believe in the middle of the country, which is awesome to hear from. So how are you doing today, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm in Utah, where we've been going through quite a heat wave the past couple of weeks. So the high today was like 95, and it felt great.
That actually sounds really wild, because we've been going through a bit of a rain spell over here after quite a dry season over the winter, and 83 feels amazing for us. Just nice 83, no rain. 95 sounds crazy.
Yeah, we had a record breaking winter, and now we have some record breaking heat too. So it's crazy.
Interesting. What was the record breaking winter like? Were you getting lows or highs?
The snowpack broke all records. Like every single ski resort pretty much had a record breaking snowpack and just a ton of water. Really, we just had it like never stopped snowing until honestly probably June. Like we had snowstorms April and May.
Are you a skier or a snowboarder?
No, my wife is though, so lot of my friends too loved it, so it was great for them.
I gotcha. So but now you're in quite a heat spell, it sounds like, so things have been well. So I did want to get into just a little bit of your background. What makes you want to talk money so much? Are you a financial advisor? Are you just someone who likes to talk, do podcasts? What's your reasoning?
Yeah, not an advisor, but I am a certified financial coach. I've done a couple of those courses and things like that. But what brought me to this point of wanting to talk about money? I used to work for a credit union. I was a supervisor in a credit union, which means I was talking to everyone who was really angry about their finances and stuff like that. Took some really crazy calls. But what brought me to this point is I would see people who were going through financial struggles where they just didn't know any better. Like I would tell them something about their finances and it would just be completely new information. And had they known this, they wouldn't have found themselves in that hard situation. So really it comes from a point of it's not taught. So that's why we need to talk about it more so that we can learn and grow and understand it better.
Absolutely. And so when I was reading through a lot of the concepts and the stuff that you posted on your website that was written, I couldn't help but notice a lot of similarities to other financial gurus, I guess you could say, that I've heard from, especially podcasters. And all it means to me is that the stuff is so plainly obvious, and it just needs to be, like you said, talked about more and more out in the public. So what made you come to an understanding to a point where you were so confident that you could write and publish things about your way of thinking, knowing that it was the right information to put in front of people's eyes? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Listening to a ton of other podcasts, like you said, there's definitely a reason why some of my stuff sounds like and has similar threads to all the other content online is there's just a way that when we're talking about it, the bad information naturally weeds itself out. When you're hearing three or four people's different voices, one of them is going to say, hey, this sounds kind of a little suspicious, and that's going to throw up flags. But when they're all in agreement, I would say, when there's kind of those interwoven threads of make sure you're saving for retirement, like get out of credit card debt, those sort of things, they kind of start to stick. So I would say just listening to multiple voices really helped build that confidence, because the good information is what stands up.
Absolutely. And have you started a business out of all this that you, all the knowledge that you've attained?
Yeah, I have my podcast, Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, and then I also do financial coaching as well on the side of my regular job in marketing. So I like to help people where I can and maybe help them understand those foundational things. Like you mentioned at the beginning, financial advisors maybe are the more higher level stuff, maybe more strategic planning, whereas a financial coach is helping someone with that entry level foundational stuff.
Yeah, definitely. It's very attractive to someone like myself as well, because that's how money just got started for me, was that baseline knowledge of understanding you want to spend less than you're earning. You want to start saving some of that extra so that you're putting away for certain things or separating it into different buckets, like certain different people say, right? So you don't just want to have one way of earning money in retirement. That stuff is kind of complex to talk about. So where is it that you gain that initial love for this or the want to go for a money background? Was it early on in life?
I think so. One of my, I would say my origin story would be that I often saw my parents only put like whatever $10 or $20 bill they had in the car for, in terms of gas. So I noticed that at a young age and I'm like, I don't ever want to find myself in a place where I don't have enough money readily available to fill a tank of gas or to get where I need to go and such. So I always found myself wanting to make sure I had that savings foundation. And then I think from there, it just has always sprung into, I love optimizing and building out systems and things like that, which I think can naturally lead to automating your finances, figuring out the most optimal way to pay off debt, the most optimal way to use credit cards, which can just lead you down a lot of rabbit holes. And then when you start combining the information, it leads you to be able to do some really fun things.
Yeah, definitely. Money is one of those things that snowballs quickly. Whether you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing, it could quickly become apparent that you're on a good, you're on a good path. Yes.
Yeah. And if you're on the wrong path, like you said, it snowballs in both ways. You're suddenly finding yourselves in so much credit card debt that it feels impossible to get out of. But I think that's another thing I like to talk about is it's always possible to change your financial situation. There's never really a too late to start kind of point. And I think that's where just talking about it can help people get out from under those maybe negative views on money that they've buried themselves in.
Yeah, definitely. So one thing that I know is, I mean, based on just the name of your podcast is being able to talk about it. So what makes you think people are so averse to speaking about money in public or just with their friends even?
Yeah, they just feel like it carries, I guess, more of a weight than it does. Most people, I would say, probably aren't going to judge you, especially if you're being honest. If you're saying, hey, I'm finding myself in this much credit card debt and I can't seem to get out of it. I know I shouldn't have it and I need to change that. I don't think people are going to, they're not going to remove you as a friend. You're not going to get kicked out of people's life for that sort of thing. And I think there's just maybe this uncertain, like taboo or stigma or whatever that term is over money, where it just makes us afraid to talk about it because no one else does. So once you break through that, I think you find that people are much more willing. Like you might run into one of your friends that you didn't know does a whole lot with credit card hacking and travel rewards and things like that. And you ask them, I can't get out of credit card debt. And they say, oh yeah, I used to be in that point. And then they help you along that journey. I think we're going to find more people struggle with money. And as we talk about it, we're going to connect those dots and help each other like overcome those struggles.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's definitely the goal. And I think with this market that we have now, it's scary to see so many people putting themselves in a position to get taken advantage of by these companies. You know, the high interest rates with credit cards are only going up with all of the general interest rate rise. So how do you recommend specifically on credit cards? What is your strategy for someone that is in over their heads?
Yeah, I would say there's definitely like two tiers to credit card users. There's people who like are in credit card debt and overspend and things like that. And I think the approach to that is you got to stop using them. Like you got to cut the source out of the problem. You can't get out of debt if you keep incurring debt. I just read that in some pamphlet that I was reading before we hopped on here. You got to stop incurring debt to get out of it. And then there's Absolutely. The other tier of credit card users who are using it wisely. And I say, if you're going for that path, you have to make sure you're paying it off monthly. Like that's a non-negotiable. And if obviously there's emergencies and situations, but those are very specific. That's not really a good general topic to talk about, but there's the people who are using them wisely and you have to start with paying it off monthly. So you can transition between those points where you go from, you have so much credit card debt, you're incurring it all the time. Let's stop using credit cards there. Take a couple months to a year or two, or however long it takes, pay it off. And then maybe slowly reintroduce credit cards and like recondition yourself to pay those off every single month and then start looking properly. At how you can use rewards. Yeah. Start using them properly, but it takes time. Don't expect to do everything overnight.
Yeah, definitely. And introducing that stuff, you can tell to some people, it's like introducing a drug and you're like, oh no, what did you start? Because they're not using it properly, not paying it off every month. So it's definitely a danger. And now another big one that I think almost every financial guru or speaker has to talk about is cars. So what could you say on the decision process behind spending the money on a vehicle, or really just, if you look at it, in my opinion, an asset that is guaranteed to depreciate as soon as you drive it off the place that you bought it from?
Yeah. Cars are such an interesting point because everything, like everyone looks at the need for one, I would say you got to look at the actual price instead of the monthly payment. If you go into a car dealership, they're going to tell you, oh, we can get you this for this much a month. And it's really easy to make that number fit in your budget. But if you say, hey, you're about to go spend $50,000 on something, like that's going to, you're going to feel that in your chest. Like when you say, here's $50,000, you're going to feel that. If you say, here's $100 a month for 7 years, you're not going to feel that as much until you start looking at the numbers later down the road and you realize you're paying so much in interest and things like that. So you got to start by just looking at the holistic price of the vehicle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I think that's a great way of looking at it. And do you recommend or don't recommend electric vehicles, or is that, have you seen any benefit monetarily as you look at people's situations? Just curious on this point.
And in terms of electric vehicles, I would say head the route of an electric bike. That's what I got. We have really one car that we use, and I tell everybody.
Those are pretty awesome, aren't they?
They are. Yes. That's how I ride my bike to the train and then ride the train for about 20 minutes and then ride my bike to work. And it's great. It saves us so much money. It's unreal because we're only using one car sparingly. I tell all my friends and say, our second car we have just kind of sits there, and we had to fill it up with gas like a couple days ago. But it had been like 4 or 5 months since we had put any gas in that. So like, if you can spread out those kind of costs a lot more, like the maintenance costs and the operating costs of a vehicle, by looking at other forms of transportation, you might find yourself saving way more money than you could imagine.
I can only imagine. Yeah, that sounds like a great move. And especially in a place like yours, where outdoor weather conditions are a lot less of a factor to consider. Mm-hmm. There's not as much rain, especially during your good seasons, I assume. What is your, now that I'm on the topic, what is your season range of snow? So when is that time that you got to be worried about that?
Yeah, probably middle of December, maybe early December to, if we had a long one, like this last winter, April, but really it's usually gone until it's gone end of February probably. And then there's some rain, but
it's pretty quick.
Like I was saying with biking, if you have a job that you can work from home, you take one day every week or two from home, and then you're even saving more money there because you can't ride out in the storm, or even sometimes it's really not that bad. It's almost more fun. I like riding in the rain because it's pretty fun. It's nice and cool. It's fun. You're just enjoying life.
That's awesome. And electric bike has no issues in that?
No. Yeah. They're all usually like weather sealed and stuff. You obviously want to dry them off, but, and don't like spray them with a hose, but they should be just fine in rain.
I love that. So returning back to finances, one of the cool things I saw when you originally sent me a bunch of things that you were interested in talking about was automation. So how do you automate your finances? And I'm curious if it's anything further than automatically taking money out of your paycheck and putting it into different buckets of earning money.
Yeah, that's definitely the best starting point. So if someone's like, what is automating your finances? Direct deposit, deciding where that money goes, your 401k, that is automation. Like that's your first step really.
Right.
As far as going further than that, we have things set up where like there's a great app called M1 Finance that automatically invests your money for you. You just put it in the account and it invests it based on your allocation. That's a really popular one. I have some fun spreadsheet tools built out because I'm a super nerd when it comes to that sort of stuff. Where like our finances are all in spreadsheets, and then there's automated emails and alerts and things set up within there. Alerts are a great tool to help you stay on top of your spending. I think it's really just like identifying the tools that are available and then actually using them, because every single credit card, every single bank has alerts. They have ways for you to monitor your spending. There's a lot of tools out there to connect your accounts to set up alerts or to set up tracking. Like you just gotta start looking, start small, and then you can build that system that really works well for you.
Absolutely. And is this what you spend a lot of time helping clients with, I assume?
I would not so much, but there is a point where you get to a point where you're saying, we're doing really good with our money. Let's start making things work for us. And that's when you're setting up those automatic contributions to retirement accounts and those sort of things. And you're making money move around automatically. I would say my main focus is really helping people get around the basics of like budgeting and understanding their spending and why they're spending and things like that.
So if someone's reaching the point of automation, you're at the point where you're probably passing someone off to the next level.
Yeah, I could definitely help with it, but there is people that like, I've had someone on my podcast that specializes in automation. So I would turn to him for questions and things like that.
That's awesome. Okay. So, and how do you go about, what do you do in your daily job?
I'm a marketing manager for a staffing company. So lots of online advertising and things like that.
Okay. So as you see that shifting, has that been a wild atmosphere to be in over these past few years. I mean, online business has skyrocketed with COVID.
Yeah, I would say like our staffing stuff has too. We're doing a ton of online things. We really aren't doing anything physically. Like everything is digital and stuff, which I think like carries over well to having a podcast and running things online.
Definitely. And one thing about talking about money that I didn't think about before, but just kind of struck me was when you talk about money, one of the most tough conversations to have, I would say, is between a couple. And you mentioned that you had your wife and you have a lot of spreadsheets and stuff that you put together, and I'm sure that you're very communicative about finances. Mm-hmm. But how do you recommend bridging that in the first place when that's not a topic that's in your relationship?
Yeah, it can be a very challenging one. I think the very first step is to start small. Like for me, coming as the money person, and I assume most people, I mean, there may be some listening to the podcast that the other spouse is the money person, but if you're the money person in the relationship, you're going to have this laundry list of things that you know can be optimized, you know you can change, and you know you can fix and improve. Don't approach the other spouse with that huge laundry list. It's just going to overwhelm them and it's going to make it contentious. Start with small things. One of the things my wife and I do that works really well for us is a monthly budget meeting, or really it's just a meeting for us to sit down, look at last month, look at the next month, and then maybe talk about some financial topics that are coming up. Because we don't want to spend all the random time we were finding ourselves. I would bring up things all the time, asking her questions, and she's just like, we don't have the capacity to have those discussions randomly all the time. It just takes up more time than you think. So we reserve that one time a month, and we'll write down any topics that obviously aren't urgent. If something's urgent, talk about it. But if there's a financial topic, like one of the things coming up is our Spotify student subscription is going to be running out of its like eligibility soon. Mm-hmm. So we put that on the agenda, so to speak, for the next time we're going to meet to talk about money. So I would say just organize yourself a little bit and don't expect to talk about it all at once. It's going to take a little bit of time. The number with budgeting is to give yourself 3 months before like you really start saying if it's working or not, because it's going to take some time to really iron out the kinks. And it's going to be the same way with trying to start a money conversation in a marriage. You got to just start small, take baby steps, make sure that both spouses are participating in the conversation and bringing topics to the conversation. Because if you're the money focused one, and you're just bringing all of these financial issues to the conversation, the other spouse is going to feel maybe overruled or overwhelmed. So make sure that both sides are bringing in conversation.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's important to not overshadow that person too. Mm-hmm. If you're the person, like you said, bringing in the money to the talk, they can easily feel overwhelmed. They could easily feel like you're trying to display your knowledge in a topic and they'll not engage. Mm-hmm. I see that as a big issue with money for sure. Hey, everybody. I just wanted to thank you all for watching and take a minute to thank Skylar for coming on, and thank you guys, and ask you guys to like, subscribe, and comment on this video, and also check out our store and our website. Over there is going to be posted a little extra tidbit that I wanted to save on the side with Skylar, a couple extra questions that dove a little deeper into our discussion today, where you will only find that over on our website. So go check that out today. That's over at wethepatriotsmedia.com. The link is in our description. And back to the show.
As you start to grow your business here, do you have plans of expanding to anything, or do you just enjoy helping out very personally like you do now?
Yeah, I like doing one-on-one stuff. I like when people reach out and say, hey, I have just a question, can you help me answer it? Because I want to be that person that people can go to for money questions if they say I'm facing this issue in my finances. But one thing I'm always looking at is like speaking opportunities or like classes and things like that. Those are fun to host and fun to be in front of a crowd and just kind of field a group of people's questions. So I would say group things is definitely like a next step. If like when I'm confident about talking about money, talk about it with a group of people and try to like facilitate conversation around it.
Gotcha. Okay. You wouldn't be opposed then to just speaking possibly to just a group of people in general and just being the head speaker talking mm-hmm. about a topic? Because I think that would be a great, I mean, your platform gives you a great place to do so.
Yeah. And one of the places I've looked at is like trying with our local libraries to host things for them and say, hey, I got this. I have all these resources I've already built. Can I present them to the people who use the library, who like often or not the library is people who are trying to be smart with money, because the library can be a great resource. So it might be people who could really use the information.
Absolutely. When you think about community impact, is that one of the things that drives what you do on the side here? Because obviously this isn't your main job, but it seems to be something you're extremely passionate about.
Yeah, absolutely. Like giving back and just sharing my knowledge with other people is definitely a key aspect in what I'm doing, and talking with other people, finding people who have financial knowledge, talking with them and sharing that through my podcast is definitely like one way to give back. And then, like I said, libraries or classes and things like that will be super fun down the road.
It definitely seems like it. I can hear it in your voice that you seem like you're someone who just loves helping people. When you talk about your podcast, has there been a guest or two that's really struck you in conversation so far? I think you've been through 100 episodes now. Is that where you're at?
Yeah, we're right about at 100. We're coming up on it. That's the goal. We're right there. So, which is awesome. Yeah. A couple of guests that have stood out to me. I've definitely had one. His name was Adam Costa. He was the one that I mentioned was talking about automation. So that was a really, really insightful episode. Other guests that I've had, there's a lot that stand out. There's one that's coming up really soon that he was in, I want to say $100,000 of credit card debt. He had very, very large credit card payments and he managed to get himself out of it. And that led him to sharing his story through helping people manage getting out of their own debt and like credit consolidation and things like that. So he tells a really interesting story. I've had a couple people on where one guy, it's just a normal everyday guy who wrote a book for his family to help leave a legacy of like financial impact. And it's not even a publicly published book. It's like a privately one that he had printed for his family. So I have a lot of fun conversations with people all over the spectrum, from authors and then from people who are in mounds of credit card debt and people who are just like family guys and stuff like that.
That's awesome. I want to reel back the conversation a little bit to automation, because it's a topic that I just love it. I'm a very mechanized brain, I think a lot like yourself. I like setting up just functions and things to do, processes that I've already been through before that I don't feel like repeating on my own set. With that being said, there's always that fear in the back of people's minds when giving that power away to a machine, especially. Now, when it comes to automation and financial planning specifically, is there anything that you've seen for people to be heads up with, or maybe keep your eyes out for certain softwares or certain sales tactics?
Yeah, that's definitely a very interesting one. I would say, like you said, the fear of giving away your responsibility to the machine, so to speak, or like, what if it messes up? That's always someone's concern. What if it doesn't make my auto payment? I would say keep tabs on that maybe for a few months, and then you can release that stress. Like your auto pay, like for me, my auto pays are all set up, but it's just a simple email reminder to me saying it went through. And that's just another step of automation. I just delete the email. Sales tactics around those sort of things, I would say, watch out for people saying they're going to like improve your money just by automation, or that it's going to, I would say, grow your money just by automation, because it's still going to take some work. You're going to have to figure some things out. I think automation might be like, in this conversation, it could sometimes be used as a cover word for something that they're trying to do something fishy. So like, don't turn it over to the machine, like we're saying, unless you know exactly what it's going to be doing. And like you said, you like to build systems for things you're already doing. Don't go out and try to find a new system that you've never done before. Use automation to replace systems that you're doing regularly and repeatedly. Like if you're going into your power company every single month to submit a payment, stop that. Like set up autopay. That's automation, which is really simple.
Yep.
Don't go and find some new automation that's going to do something you've never heard of before, because it's probably not going to be good.
I think that's really good advice. And now, what would you say about, there is a lot to do with trusting the fact that your information is going over these, you know, the bandwidth of the internet and making it to its destination safely.
when it comes to financial transfers like that. Have you noticed any issues that haven't been resolved when it comes to this stuff? Like when, you know, say an auto pay accidentally charges you for the month and someone doesn't get reimbursed? Like, have you ever seen anything like this?
No, I haven't. Usually these kind of issues that you're describing, like with auto pay, is something that happens to like my grandparents. And that's because they set up two payments right. automatically. Like they paid it themselves right. and the institution paid it automatically. So like, just be aware of the automations you set up and make sure you're not double paying things. Because if you're in a situation where you're trying to get out of debt, that can put you in a real bind. If you now have to go hunt down extra payments left and right, because you paid people twice. So if you set up your automation, trust it, and then check it after the fact, because most places are going to give you that grace period where if you say, oh, I set it up on auto pay, but I don't think it worked or didn't go through, they're going to say, well, that's okay. Let's just get the payment taken care of. They just want your money. So if it doesn't work, then it's fine, but make sure you're not like doubling up on things. Other issues, I don't know. I don't think I've really seen anything in terms of like security or issues like that. Every single like online tool now, there's things like Plaid and all those different connectivity tools that allow you to sign in through these third-party software. So make sure you're using reputable software. If you've never heard of it, just do a quick Google search. Say, is so-and-so legit? And then check out four or five different sources. You'll find your answer pretty quick. But just make sure you're doing your own little bit of research if you're coming across a tool you've never heard of before.
Gotcha. So I want to shift the conversation over to something that I'm not sure if it is a whole rabbit hole in of itself. Would you be able to explain to me what is a sinking fund, or what you call also a bucket?
Yeah, it is a rabbit hole. I have a couple episodes on my podcast about it, so they can check those out as well. But a sinking fund or a bucket, I call it both because it'll get used by both terms. But essentially what it is, let's say I'm going to use a vacation sinking fund or bucket as an example. Okay. You're going to budget, for example, $50 a month towards your vacation fund. And that $50 isn't going to get spent every single month. There's going to be some months where you don't go on vacation, some where you do. The whole idea of the sinking fund or bucket is that that money that's in that category flows into that bucket when you don't spend it. So then your bucket fills up with that extra money, so that when you do go on a vacation, let's say in 6 months or something like that, you have 6 months worth of $50, or I think $300 in that account now saved up to go on vacation. It allows you to, essentially it's just saving through budgeting. You're just breaking down those costs. And instead of it being like, it's almost like a subscription to yourself in a way, like a subscription for savings kind of thing.
I think it highly ties into automation as well. And kind of what I mentioned on the onset of us talking about automation is where you're going to have to start deducting money from your paycheck before you even spend it. And the whole point is that you're not letting yourself touch that money because it's already dedicated to yourself in the future.
Yeah. And a key thing with this automation and buckets is you could have an entirely separate savings account set up through somewhere like Ally or any sort of those different bank accounts. And you just have part of your paycheck going there, and then you divide it up from there. I think Ally's notorious for their buckets, and they're somewhere where a lot of people talk about when you get to this buckets and sinking funds idea, because they have a lot of automation tools built behind it. Mm-hmm. You could have, let's say your paycheck, you have 80% going to, or we'll use round numbers. You have $800 going to your main account and $200 of your remaining paycheck going to this Ally account. And then within there, you can set up your buckets that can have automation behind them of how much to distribute between each one. So you're not even seeing this money you're saving. It's not even getting to you. And one of my favorite things from the book called The Automatic Millionaire is that he talks about you're going to learn to live on less if you set it up that way. So if you set it up that your paycheck is less when it gets to your account, you're going to be just fine. You're going to figure out how to buy clothes within that range. You're going to figure out how to buy food. You're going to figure the rest of that out, because it's just the way we naturally work. So if you can maybe divert some of that money before it gets to you, it's an awesome way to save money.
Yeah, definitely. And it gives you that that automatic tightening of the of the pocket, where you just don't have that money to access anymore. Can't spend
it. Yeah, it just makes it way easier. You learn to live on what you have. And when you make it less automatically and keep the money elsewhere, you're going to be fine.
I love that. I think it's a great way of just describing a simple function of money, but complex enough to get someone interested, maybe. Yeah, it's very simple, and it has that kind of redundancy factor that I think every single different financial talking head says the same thing in a different way. And it's just about getting that message out to enough people to actually get it going. Have you witnessed a lot of people fall into financial hardship over your lifetime?
Yeah, and I would say that was a lot of that was in my credit union job as a supervisor. I would just see people who they'd be calling in just upset, expecting the credit union to do something, which is unfortunate. It puts everyone in a pickle because like we want to help over the phone, but also we can't because they've found themselves in a situation where they're just like overloaded with debt and things like that. And like to go back to our car conversation a little bit, they were looking at the monthly payments, and then you can always in your mind afford $10 a month. Like it's just such a small amount of money, but $10 a month across everything or higher or lower, all those monthly subscriptions to your car payments, to your credit card payments, to your store payments, to your subscriptions, those all add up so fast that people find themselves like, where'd all my money go? Instead right. of the automation taking your paycheck at the beginning, it's taking it all right at the end, and then you're really left with nothing.
Right. Absolutely. And I do think that's one of the pitfalls that you need to make sure you defend yourself from on the onset and all the time, for sure. One thing that I did want to ask, because it's kind of one of the topics I like bringing up with most of my guests nowadays, is topic of AI, and specifically as it terms to money. How do you see AI helping, hurting, or being neutral? How do you see it affecting our progress in the financial field going forward?
Yeah, I think it's just going to speed everything up, which I think is the general consensus across the board.
Okay.
It's going to make things faster. I'm excited to see how Google integrates their stuff into Sheets, because if I can ask their Google Bard, I think is its name, if I can ask it to analyze all my transactions for trends, then I don't have to like build some fancy spreadsheet to do those sort of things. I think it's just going to allow us to get a more layman term kind of response out of all of the data that we're trying to keep track of and things like that. So I think it's going to be really fun. It's going to make things like really cool. It's going to make things quicker. It's going to make it easier to, like I was saying, all these automations and stuff I'm building in my spreadsheets by typing into ChatGPT, say, build me a Google app script that does the following. Like you just put it in simple words and it'll write you the code and tell you how to run it and how to set it up and everything. And that's super cool to see. Like once it starts working and stuff, like there's things that our spreadsheets are doing that I have no idea how to code. Like I have a very general knowledge when it comes to coding, but and enough to like understand how it's working. But then I just ask ChatGPT to build me something and it does all of that work and knows everything like when it comes to coding, that sort of stuff. So it's just going to make everything faster. It's going to give us a lot more cool tools are going to come out of it around all the data that we have.
Is there any tools or maybe abilities of tools that you're kind of hoping for or looking forward to?
In a financial sense, I don't think so. There's nothing like at the top of my mind. In terms of AI in general, one of the coolest use cases I've seen is like accessibility features, especially for people who have vision problems. There's a use case on, I think, OpenAI's website about how there's a app for the blind that they can point their camera at, and using ChatGPT and AI, it will recognize it, understand it. Like they pointed it at like a bottle of something or a box of something. It said, this is this, and the cook time. And like, it just gave them extra information like instantaneously. So those sort of use cases to me, like accessibility and using AI to like incorporate technology into helping people is going to be really cool.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it just opens the box to a lot more people. Mm-hmm. That just sounds awesome. I'm looking forward to a lot of these glasses that are coming out. I'm not sure if I'm going to go with that Apple Pro and bite the bullet on $3,500, but there's a lot of competitors dropping glasses now and ahead of time. That augmented reality looks fantastic.
Yeah, and you start integrating that with AI and you start getting all these just amazing tools where you're just in public and it's telling you all these things so quickly. Like think of it in terms of like public transit information instantaneously. If like something is going on nearby, like emergency response information is just going to be really cool, quick, and really accessible using AI.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Now, one thing that I am a little bit worried about with all of these great tools is I feel like you're alienating a certain amount of people that are just not going to be using the baseline tool, which is like computers. As much as we might not think about it in our everyday lives, like there's a certain amount of people that don't use computers or phones as much as we use them on a daily basis, nor do they want to. So does this prescription that's slowly going to whittle its way into just everyday life and everybody using it, does that leave these people so far in the dust that they are going to be the next generation of poverty and or homelessness?
Yeah, that's an interesting, like, almost like moral dilemma, I guess, of technology accelerating, is that it can tend to leave people behind. I think there's always going to be the space of people who are building for just the, like, low tech lifestyle. I don't think that's going to go away entirely. Like, there's always the options of keeping everything super simple. I don't think there'll ever not be written books and things like that. There's always going to be ways to print stuff and things like that. So there's definitely, I don't think the people are going to be left completely in the dust. It is an interesting conversation to have. I definitely don't have all the answers, but I like where that question leads my mind to think about, because I think about my grandparents who schedule two automatic payments and get frustrated because the system messed up. Like, how are they going to function when AI is doing it all automatically, when your email is recognizing your bills and paying stuff for you, or things like that? Like, they wouldn't even comprehend how AI could work.
Right. And the stuff that might be based off of your use case of 5 years of using a product, and they just don't do it. You know, I think even my parents don't do much auto pay, or at least a lot of it's not set up. So you think about them getting older and not having the time to do certain things, and are they going to be paying attention to stuff like that? Yeah, you get worried about those types of people, you know, older immigrants coming in. How are they set to fit into the society? So I think it's going to be stuff that we're dealing with on a policy level shortly. But I don't want to end the show on all such a negative note, even though it's a thinking question.
Very interesting. Yes.
Skylar, I think that everything that you prescribe let's put it this way. If you're able to access this podcast, you are able to access the tools that you need to become financially stable. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. If you're able to listen to this. So what kind of advice can you leave with the people, I would say, on just getting it together if you feel like you're left out financially?
Yeah, start simple, start small. I would say it can feel like there's so many things we need to fix financially in our life, where it's credit card debt, it's auto loan debt. Maybe you have a payday loan from somewhere. Maybe you aren't getting paid as much as you feel like in your work. Maybe write all those things down, and then don't take them all on at once. Like, just start with something. You're going to be just fine, because you're going to start building that momentum around those few things when you start getting those quick wins and stuff of paying off those small amount credit cards and stuff. You're going to start building that momentum and stuff that's going to allow you to take down your whole list. But I would say don't try to do it all at once, because obviously you're just going to leave yourself overwhelmed and then nothing is going to get done. So just take things on slowly. The whole idea behind, like, credit card payoff is to start with one, put your extra payments there, and then just keep rolling it over into the other things. So start with one thing, get your momentum going there, and then just roll it into the others. If you feel like, using the example I just said, if you feel like you're not getting paid enough, start there, because getting more money is going to really help you in the rest of your journey. And then look at, okay, this payday loan is crippling me. There's so much interest going to this. Knock that out. And then you say, wow, I just paid off that debt. What other debts do I have? Where can I start with that? Like, just get the ball rolling with something very small, and only one thing is really my ultimate advice.
Start with one, knock it out, get to the other one, knock it out, get to the next.
Yeah, because you're not going to be able to take on the army of financial burdens that are weighing down your shoulders.
I could not appreciate that advice more. Skylar, you have been a pleasure to have on. Was there anything else that you wanted to get off your shoulders before we get out of here today? Other than go check out your 100th episode coming out soon.
Yeah, that's coming up. It's coming up, which is super fun. I never thought I'd get there. I remember when I got to 52 for 1 year of doing my podcast, and looking at 100 now is super awesome. So yeah, you can find that online, Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, wherever you listen to podcasts. My website, skylarfleming.com. I'd be happy to chat about any of the things that I mentioned in this episode with anyone. So reach out to me. I love to chat about this sort of stuff. I love to talk money.
Awesome, Skylar. Like I said, thank you so much. I don't see any reason why we wouldn't be talking again in the future. This has been really fantastic. Thank you, man.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, man.
Thank you. Damn. I wish I were the fucking state. I want to be something, not nothing. Trapped inside my dream, and I'm running away from these demons.
But the feeling's so good, I'ma keep dreaming.